Hello, my name is Dan Brown, and I'm here today again with another A Lens a Day, conversations about information architecture. And today I get to talk to the sensational Daniel Souza. Daniel, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thanks you for inviting me, Dan. It's a pleasure.
So let's get right into it. Let's talk process. I'm really curious about how people do information architecture. And I wonder if you could share with us, what is your favorite way for bringing people into the IA process? We're often dealing with abstractions. We're often dealing with concepts rather than sort of physical elements. We're often dealing with the idea of relationships. What is it that you do to bring other people into that process with you?
Mm-hmm. So I think usually when some people think about information architecture, perhaps the first word they think is documentation, right? Because we tend to look at the artifacts as signifiers. I think for my practice, and besides calling myself an information architect, I've been doing many other things. I think the core is conversations, good conversations. I think when you establish a set of good grounding in terms of adherence to truth and a space for challenging each other through group conversations, through debate, I think is the basics for my collaboration practice on information architecture. But it's something that I'm learning every day, then I don't have all the answers. It's as anything related to AI, I think it's about dealing with ambiguity and learning with people, going together, right? I think.
I like how you framed it as debate. And sometimes that to me, that can sound very adversarial, right? Sort of can sound very fraught with conflict. Are there things that you like to do in your conversations or in your meetings to help people feel comfortable with the back and forth, with the conflict that might ensue? Because sometimes that might make someone feel uncomfortable, or it might make them feel like there's a problem with their ideas. What do you do to kind of help people feel comfortable with that kind of debate format?
That's such a great question, though, because I think that in reality, I think in the industry that we work with software, right? And sometimes we think that everything is logical, and it's not. And some people, they don't get, it's not easy for some people to get into heated debates or discussions about things. But I learned with my therapist recently that meaning is pain. So if you're designing or if you're creating anything that is meaningful in the world, there will be some pain. Yeah, it's a very hard to face that reality. And I think the way I do it's that first is to help people to get comfortable with ambiguity. It's one thing that is quite important for me. So they understand that I think in system language, we talk about complexity, and there's many ways to frame complexity. But I think to make things easy for everyone, what I normally say is that, folks, it's all an experiment. we're dealing with language. So we're dealing with things that are not binary. It's quite hard to think. So that's my first tactic, right? And the second one, I think it's sometimes about being humble as well, right? I think we have this idea sometimes that as information architects, we are here to bring clarity or to create better decisions or better choices. But sometimes I normally talk about this when we're having heated discussions, is that I don't know the answers, but I'm curious about hearing you and hearing others to find out what we will discover together. So I think there's this balance between being very humble and at the same time trying to bring some kind of quality that is really hard to describe and even to reassure, right? Because I think the quality, when we talk about categories, it's so subjective, then it's so hard to say, oh, this is wrong or this is right. I think what I normally what I always think about in projects is that it's just temporary. It's the best we can do, and we need to be thinking about how can we evolve as soon as we have a new version. So it's always about iteration, always about conversations that will lead you to the next level, right? As something that it's, I don't like to use any agile reference on it, but I think the in that sense, the culture of iteration on agile is quite helpful for myself. It's something that I truly believe.
Oh, well, there's a lot there I could ask you about right now, but let's get into it. Do you feel like the practice of information architecture is incompatible with agile? That is to say that by trying to do information architecture the best it can possibly be, that it needs another kind of project structure that mm-hmm. is not agile, that agile is not an appropriate project structure for doing information architecture.
Dan, this is a question that I'm trying to answer for years, right? Because my original background is in consultancy, right? So my first job as an information architect was in a big consultancy called Isobar in Brazil, and was doing UX projects for banks, right? And I think you have actually more experience than me, but 10 or 15 years ago, you might remember that agile was not a thing as it is today, right? So there was no idea of product teams or cross-disciplinary teams. And at the time we are very sure that waterfall was the solution. And the way we managed to make sure that we had a lot of quality in design was having the design behind the design. Information architecture is one of the most important stages of a project, perhaps sometimes even before research, because there was also our role as business consultants to understand the domains, the business domains, even before you conduct user research, right? In the old times. Today is completely different, right? So I think today we have this mantra in product organizations that starting together is the right thing. So you start the design team, the research team, the technology team, the business analysis. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question in terms of if it's possible. I just think that today, that's the game we are playing. And sometimes I think that there's a lot of conversations about discovery or product discovery. I feel that in some moments, I think we did this better before. And I think we still need to find the right balance of designing for software and designing for services in organizations. Because I think that's where the gap is, in my opinion, Dan, is that not everything is software. And information architecture, it's about the world of services as well, or the world of information, the world, the way we see things in the world, the way we understand, the way we make sense. And sometimes software is not part of it. It's not just that, right? So I think that's the big drama I think we have today. Perhaps I think a recent interview you had on AI Lenses with Peter Milhouse, right? About org design, I think he challenged that as well, that the way design teams, they try to adapt to technology teams or to development teams today. And so there is this challenge, there is this drama. The way I prefer to say it today is that I'm willing to take the challenge. So that's why I work in product today. But I also understand that we can do better in terms of proper discovery and prepping teams and working with the meaningful things before even the design starts. I think that's where information architecture should play. I'm not going to even enter into the big AI and little AI conversation because I'm going to annoy you on that.
Yeah, you're the first one to bring that up. 42 of these things, and you are the first one to bring up big AI versus little AI. So thank you for that. Actually, I wanted to ask you about, since you were in consulting and you've moved over to product, you said, can you compare and contrast the practice of IA in each of those spaces? I know we're dealing with kind of a gap of time too, but I also feel like there's a different perspective on information architecture in each of those settings, in each of those contexts. How would you compare and contrast IA as a consultant versus IA in product?
Yeah. I think in the top of my mind, I think as a consultant, normally, even if you do all the meetings, you build the relationships, in the end, there's a lot of importance of documents and documentation, your final presentation or how you frame the problem and how you leave something for them to work with, right? But when you work in a client, in a product organization, I think the moments of interaction with the teams, it's all about not only having the conversations, but moving things forward, right? So I think it's the difference of the practice, right? I think you're more active when you work in a client organization. And you also have skin in the game, which is slightly different when you work in a consultancy, right? Because normally you have a very strict deadlines and stuff like that. I think it's when you have the chance of acting on the change, not just envisioning the change, but actually you're there to remove the bureaucracy or sometimes to accept the bureaucracy and work with the people in order to make sure that everything you're doing will be useful and helpful for the users in terms of making sense of the information architecture, right? So it's a very interesting position I am now, because I did this change 3 times, working initially on as consulting, going for client, then consulting back and client, and now I'm back to client. But yeah, it's a tricky one.
So I think now's a good time for us to bring up the lens. And one of the things you said earlier really struck me, and I don't know if you were trying to foreshadow the lens or not, but you were talking about how, you know, even though we're designing things, I think what you were talking about is even though we're designing things, it's just temporary. Those are the words that you said. Like, how can we think about evolving when we have a new version? And this is something that, as in doing information architecture, we need to think of a lot, right? Even though we're designing, even the word structure sounds very static, but what we're really designing are systems, things that are moving a lot. So perhaps with that clumsy preamble, you can share with us the lens that we picked for you, and maybe describe it in your own words, or at least tell us what it means to you.
Awesome. So the lens we chose was slow change, right? And I think it's about how the structural elements, sometimes they change according to organization ability to maintain or sometimes even evolve, right? So, and it's really, really nice, this hook then, because I think this is also something about when you're working as a consultant, sometimes you're blind to that speed of change of the organization. How hard for some organizations it's sometimes, I think, as a external actors, we think that it's just an app, just a website. But the change we create, they are actually cultural changes, right? So how people see information internally, I think normally we are very good at using user research to measure how people understand or how they make sense of information externally, right? But the change only happens when you have the internal actors, people who are providing the service, who are connected with that change as well, right? So in that case, I think that slow change, it's like a life lesson for me, because when I made that shift from consulting to client, I actually was able to finally understand that. Why sometimes things that you had in a PowerPoint were not feasible, right? Or were not easy to happen, right? So I'm not sure if I was able to explain the lens or give a proper example.
Oh, that was great. I really like that. And as you were talking, what it made me think of is as we're doing these, as we're making these designs, as we're kind of coming up with, you know, metadata tags for people to use, that even though there are, those are pixels or bits, that there are so many people behind those bits, that by even making a change to a label, we are potentially impacting someone's day-to-day job, right? As you say, we're used to thinking about it on the front end, on like, how are people going to perceive this? But if we make a change to a label, how does that impact the folks inside the organization as well?
Exactly. And sometimes we are not, let's say that sometimes we're not conscious about those changes, and we don't have, how can I say, perhaps some people don't think that this is part of the job. And also with the rise of service design as a design discipline, let's say that it looks more connected with the work of service designers to look at those two angles, right? The front end and the back end, right? What we do in order to deliver that experience. But I think information architecture, there's a huge role for us on that, because if we are willing to create things that are not only flexible and adaptive, but resilient over time, I think we need to use other tools and other types of thinking as well in order to make sure that the changes we are creating are sustainable and they are meaningful for the people who are providing the service as well, right? For the internal stakeholders, for the employees. I think everything is connected then. Work needs to connect those two worlds, right? I think sometimes we reject the internal language because we are ambassadors of the users, right? Perhaps there's a role for us to help the internal users, the employees, the stakeholders to shift their language as well.
Right.
Not only us taking that role of, what do you think about that?
What it makes me think about is how much the internal folks, the people in the organization, tie their identity to the things that they see in the product or on the website. And that, I mean, I literally just got off a call about this very thing, where I'm dealing with a federal organization in the United States that has an out of control left-hand navigation. And it's because there's a very narrow view internally that link in the left-hand nav is my world. And if you make a change to that, then you're changing my world, right? So it's clearly that what that has gotten me to think about more and more is, can we design structures that are usable for users, for people out, for customers, but that don't have such obvious manifestations in the UI, right? Do we need a left nav? Do we need a main menu? Do we need these things? Mm-hmm. Or are there other mechanisms? As you say, we need to expand our thinking. Are there other ways we can encourage people to navigate through the space without creating these opportunities for internal folks to get so attached to certain labels? You know what I mean?
Oh, I know a lot. And as you were saying, I was just thinking about carousels, right? The issue with carousels is exactly this, is the land grabbing, right? It's, I need to be there. I need to, not only on navigation, but I think how many times I had this issues like this, when you have this failed behaviors in terms of, oh, that link is mine or something like that. But one thing that I was thinking about then when you're saying that, I was thinking about Conway's law, right? Which is this, I think I take a note here, right? Because it's the organizations are constrained to produce application designs which are copies of their communication structures. Have you heard about this concept?
Oh, yeah.
It's funny because it's even a joke, right? Because we we keep talking about the inverse Conway maneuver in IT and software, right? When you change the platform structures to avoid that silo thinking, right? And my understanding is that I think we are able to create the information architectures that are malleable enough for us to reduce the conflict, the internal conflicts, as well as delivering meaning for the users. It's just that we are so we are hired for just one part of the job, let's say. And sometimes this is about another topic that I think you've been talking recently is about the mythologies, right? The corporate mythologies as well, right? People, they have ideas that or beliefs that we should be only doing things like this, or that's our purpose, or founder always think about that, or that was the idea, the original idea for the company. So we have a role on that. And I think we through conversation and through collaboration, I think we could alleviate those conflicts as we go along designing new information architectures and new structures that could help people to thrive as well, right? So I keep thinking about this as something that when talking about slow change, right? And I reminded me about something that I saw in a talk you delivered a few years ago about base layers. Do you remember base layers, right? And yeah. We're talking now about how sometimes you make a change in navigation that create waves of impact, right? I wonder if there's a place for information architects to visualize that speed of change as well when we are leading products. And in terms of, I think it's not about slow change in that sense. It's that change that works. How can we create that structures that will be evolving the right pace to tackle the organization issues that are behind the experience gaps, right? As we test new navigation structures or new taxonomies or new metadata structures, right? I think it becomes more complex. Let's be honest, right? It is already a lot of complexity. But I just think that will leave us in a place where we will be more effective as a discipline in that sense.
So you and I have had years to cultivate our experience and thinking on this. And I feel like there are a lot of designers who are just coming into the field or who have only been in the field for a few years who don't have the benefit of that experience to really understand the relationship between information architecture and change. And I wonder if you were mentoring or coaching one of these a UX designer who's just come into the field who has not really spent as much time thinking deeply about information architecture, how might you coach or mentor them to understand the relationship between change and the IA work that we're doing, or really kind of any IA issues that you can think of?
Mm-hmm. So it's funny because I think when we have conversations with designers, we normally don't talk about organizational design or change management because those are seen sometimes as old school consulting techniques or business. It is not there, right? And let's be honest, I think designers, they don't care too much about that, right? I will start with that. I think change management, it's really important. I think sometimes we cringe when we heard things like target operating models. It's a word that some people, right? So I think, I don't want all designers like having MBAs, but I think we need to understand how organizations work. We need to understand how to talk or understand mythologies or beliefs in organizations. I think it's an important skill. And a very simple tool for that then is to ask good questions. I think sometimes as designers, we don't spend enough time with the project sponsors or perhaps even the product people or the HR people in companies where we are delivering work to understand the cultural aspects. I think it's quite important. It's the success of your project. We normally have the task or the aim to develop great relationships with technology teams or product teams, but there are a lot of people behind the thing you're creating. So how can we help designers to understand that? I think it's something that it's funny you asking because I never had any mentor. I never did that. I do in the work, right? But I think it was such a great question. Perhaps I have to start thinking about that, which were the skills I could help the new generation to develop in terms of business management or change management, organizational design, because I think it's much needed, right?
Daniel, that was fantastic. I think we will leave it there. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Dan. And I'm loving the one lens a day. Keep doing that, please.
I'll try. It's getting a little tiring.